Here at Renew Energy Partners, climate change is very important to us, and so is beer. In every episode of the Green Beers podcast, we taste a beer together. We talk about the brewery and their sustainability practices. And then we talk about a topic relating to our work in decarbonizing buildings and mitigating climate change.
Welcome to Green Beers Podcast. My name is Mike Savage, and I'm here with
Charlie Lord,
Nathan Montgomery,
and our special guest,
Matthew Wolf.
Matt, welcome. We are
who
here.
Who is Matthew Wolf?
Who is Matthew Wolf? So much to cover. Yeah. Actually, we just discovered we have special effects, so let's go back. We're going to keep this on tape. Say our special guest.
Mike. And our special guest,
Matt Wolf. Thank you. Thank you. Please stop. Enough.
Crowd goes wild. All right, we're going to have fun with that one. Stop. And you may think that we're here with Yoda / Barry White, but it's actually Mike Savage with a cold.
Savage. And nothing's better than a cold than a fresh what I have today, Labatt Blue.
Which, all right, I know you are drinking a beer. You are drinking Labatt's. We're drinking Trillium. So we're going to have to do... Mike is in Vermont today because... I'm just going to go full disclosure, Mike. Your preschool shut down because of COVID, which is very 2020 of you, but it's 2023. And that is the truth. So you'll sip a beer, but I'm going to do the same thing I did last time, which is I'm going to score for you. Okay.
Of that, I appreciate. Yeah. And I think one day we'll get to Labatt. I am up by the Canadian border, and this is all that I have up in the fridge.
Let's do it. Let's do Labatt's next time. All right. Well, let's get to our special guest, Matt Wolf. Matt is the principal at Ice Tech, and VP of Business Development at Ice Tech. The most knowledgeable person I know on. All things microgrid, and particularly revenue streams, development, and financing of these projects, and a great friend. One of my favorite people in the industry, and now a partner of Renew's. Ice Tech and Renew are working together on developing standalone battery projects, which we'll come back to. But Matt, tell us about your career. How did you get to Ice Tech, and... and tell us a little bit about Ice Tech as well in terms of what you all do.
How far you want to go back, Charlie?
Second grade.
That'd be Mrs. Murphy.
She'd be so proud, man.
Very formative year at Sacred Heart Elementary School in Wasn't, Davenport,
Did she
Iowa.
Like you? Were you on her good side?
Actually, my second grade teacher did not particularly care for me. So maybe that is a good place to start.
You turned it all around.
I will not bore everybody by going back to second grade in Iowa. Where do we want to start? I graduated college, did different tech stuff as people were wont to do in the late 90s and early 2000s. And actually how I ended up getting into the kind of the renewable space is a bit of a... It actually, a lot of it started actually on 9/11 because I worked for a software company that our founder actually passed away in 9/11.
Oh, man.
And it was kind of I had to travel that night before, and there was storms the night before. And I don't know if I ever told you this.
No, I haven't heard this story. This is remarkable.
We had to travel the night before, and there was, if you remember that, out of Boston the night before, there was storm.
Mm-hmm.
And, I remember talking to my girlfriend at the time and now wife and saying, like, I'm not sure if I'm going to get out tonight, but if I go out tomorrow, I'll have to go through L.A. first, and that would have been Flight 11.
Oh, my God, man. Wow.
So, but I wasn't on it. We got out that night and woke up to about 15 messages from then-girlfriend, now-wife. And that just sort of said, you know what, it came to the realization that we had to do something that I really liked and believed in. And it's also kind of, Charlie, I don't know if you felt this way, but, You know, I think to be good at something, you have to really care about it, right?
Yeah.
Because you have to be good at it. You have to start looking around corners to some degree, right? Like, what's next?
Yeah, I 100% agree. And that's an amazing insight about. And, you know, one of the things that's great about working in this space is that the people that we get to work with are almost always that way.
Yeah, you feel really strongly about it, right?
Yeah.
You feel really strongly about.
Yeah.
So I very soon thereafter no longer decided to, I wanted to work at that organization. It was a great place, great friends, great technology, but it was like software sales and I just didn't really care about it.
Mm-hmm.
And I wasn't, as a result of that, I don't think I was particularly good at it. Mm-hmm. So I went back to school, went to the Fletcher School. At the time, there wasn't really that whole thing there is now with like, how do you meld sustainability and finance and an MBA program and stuff like that.
Right.
So I went to the Fletcher School at Tufts and got what's called a MALD, a Master of Arts in Law and Diplomacy, which is by far and away the worst name for a degree that you can possibly have.
I mean, particularly because you got law and diplomacy.
Law and diplomacy, right? I think it served me pretty well. Yeah. I'm either a lawyer or a diplomat. But I have a MALD. So, and got into energy because, you know, energy is a place where, you know, you can make a difference, right? If you get kind of in that renewable energy space, and if you do it right, you can actually, you know, be successful monetarily as well.
Yep.
Which, you know, with a growing family is also a nice thing.
Absolutely. You got to be able to do something you believe in and support the family. That's really
good. Yeah, right. Goal. Like, you know, college is not cheap.
Yeah.
So, that's how I got into this space and got into, you know, working for different energy companies and then eventually, you know, getting the renewable development space and then eventually kind of work my way behind the meter.
Yeah.
You know, where I help develop a bunch of cogeneration plants, energy efficiency projects. Those projects, you know, generate these different sort of credits, environmental certificates, if you will, that I help trade, which eventually led me to ICETEC. And ICETEC is, you know, this really... The thing that drew me to ICETEC is this philosophy that ICETEC has about being dynamic.
Mm-hmm.
And what does that mean, being dynamic? It's, to me, it means that you are constantly changing how you operate an asset, whatever that asset be.
Could be microgrid, like the one we run together up in Lowell, which is a cogen plus a battery.
It could be a microgrid. It could be a chiller, steam chiller versus... electric chiller. It could be an electric boiler, you know, looking forward, an electric boiler versus a steam boiler. It could be a battery. It could be generation. It could be, you know, heat pumps versus, you know, anything.
Mm-hmm.
It's this idea of being dynamic and reacting to a market signal, whether that market signal be economic, right? You know, responding to prices. You know, we'll talk about this later, or if it's, you know, responding to carbon.
Right.
Right. This idea of changing how you operate and then taking that asset, reacting to different market and, you know, other signals, environmental signals, if you will, and trying to optimize those assets, whatever those assets are, in a whole variety of different markets that might exist.
Yeah, and you know, your comment about looking around corners is such a great way of describing it. I think, as you pointed out, anybody in a dynamic field like renewable energy, if you want to succeed, you need to have that as part of your DNA. You need to be looking forward to where this rapidly changing sector is going, right? And specifically, as it relates to ICETEC, you guys are looking around corners on a per-project basis, on a daily basis with your software as a service technology. But, and I'm hoping you can dive into this a little bit, you know, a lot of the economics you're talking about are based on these various utility, state, and service operator programs, and those change all the time as well. And I should add, as I mentioned, Matt, no one is more knowledgeable about these programs than Matt, and he's helped us design.
Except for the people I work with, who are a lot more knowledgeable.
Which is even better.
They've actually probably forgotten more than I know.
I just want to tell a story. This is a story I tell friends a lot when they kid me about the fact that as someone with a law degree, I'm up to my eyeballs in renewable energy and energy efficiency technology. And I say, well, we have people on our team that understand the technology and the technical aspects. That's not me. But when Matt and I go on when we go visit a customer site together, he and I will often end up looking at each other and say, it's all ball bearings these days. Which those of you who are under 40 may not understand the reference, but it's a reference.
Do you get it, Mike?
Fletch. Do you get that? Do you know that reference?
Nope. No. Is it My Cousin Vinny?
No.
Nope.
I wish.
It's a movie called Fletch with Chevy Chase where he pretends to be a mechanic and just says it's all ball bearings. I recommend it to our listeners under 40 to go watch Fletch.
It's your homework, right? Charlie and I are like in a mechanical room and, we start, pointing at the deaerator and be like, look at the deaerator on that.
It's all ball bearings.
you get somebody with a mold and an actual lawyer room.
That's what happens when we end up in the mechanical room. But, it points to the fact that this industry requires a lot of skills, including and critically what you guys at Icetech bring to the table.
Yeah, I mean, it's kind of get back to that idea of looking around corners. It's, these are really, the energy market is a really complicated system, right? Just like, healthcare or education or all these things that are so complicated. Like once you get into it, they're pretty humbling too, right? Because you kind of think you figure it out and then something happens. You're like, oh, okay, well, I guess I didn't understand that well. So it's this humility of realizing that things are constantly changing and being open, using technology to change with it, right? Mm-hmm. And, we think about, if we can get in, you want to get an example of like the project we're working on?
That'd be great. Yeah.
So like, Charlie, Renew and ourselves have worked on this microgrid project that you've talked about in other episodes. It's in Massachusetts. It's in Lowell. It's a cogeneration plant together with a battery storage system. That is, providing a number of resiliency benefits to the customer and economic benefits to the customer. And at any given time, the battery, as an example, it can be participating in ISO markets. It actually just got dispatched for energy today.
What's an ISO market is?
So ISO, thank you for catching me on my
acronym.
On my acronyms, yeah. My alphabet soup. ISO is independent system operator. It's sometimes also called an RTO. So it's basically the organization that operates the quote unquote grid. And in New England, it's the six New England states. Mm-hmm. New York has one. The biggest of them is probably PJM, which sort of stretches from the Mid-Atlantic out to Chicago. There's one in the Midwest called MISO, one in California called CAISO,
Texas
is ERCOT. Texas is interesting because they ran into trouble because they have actually not opened their RTO, their ISO outside of Texas, because once you open it up to other states, you're subject to FERC jurisdiction. Mm-hmm. So the reason that they've had so many issues is because they're a single state ISO with no connections there.
They want to go it alone. But if something goes wrong, they can't connect to the rest of the country to support them and solve the problem.
So when they get into a cold snap and they need more power because, their pipes are frozen, they can't rely on Oklahoma or whatever the case may be. Mm-hmm. So for us in New England, it's called the New England ISO, and they mm-hmm. operate the quote-unquote grid. In any given time, there's a number of different sort of energy-related markets happening. It could be capacity. It can be actual energy itself, like kWh. There's this market called frequency regulation. There's a market called reserves, et cetera, et cetera. It's sort of these extremely esoteric and niche-y given markets.
And those markets exist because they're trying to send signals to people that use energy to do different things to keep the grid operating effectively.
Yeah, I mean, their primary mandate, and I'm no expert on the ISO as it relates to this. We have people that, again, have forgotten more than I know. Mm-hmm. But their primary mandate is to keep the lights on, right?
Right.
So, you know, some of it is running an energy market. So people, you know, that can make money by generating electricity and selling it, and capacity markets. So make sure you have enough capacity when you need it on a really hot day or really cold day. There's a market called frequency regulation, which, you know, for the, you know, law and diplomacy major here, I understand it as, you know, when you flick on the lights, you know, and turn on a 50 watt bulb, that's 50 watts of electricity you need, you know, in any given time, people are flipping on lights all over New England. Right. So you have this market that is constantly kind of, you know, moving up and down at very small increments to make sure when Charlie Lord flicks on the lights, that the lights come on. And when he flicks them off, that they go off. And a power plant doesn't trip off because of that.
Right.
Right. So it's these really esoteric markets.
And we, in our project in Lowell, can participate in some of those markets through our battery. Right.
Participate in almost all of them at any given time.
Right.
And what our technology does is take that asset, and through technology, software as a service, we essentially, you know, quote unquote, dispatch that battery in any number of those markets at any given time. Some of them are the ISO markets. Some of them are state programs that incentivize, you know, battery storage. Some of them are, you know, sort of utility programs that incentivize for demand response, et cetera. Mm-hmm. So, you know, what our technology does is saying, hey, on this day or in this time, you know, we're going to use these assets in a certain way, mm-hmm. right? And we're going to dispatch them in the energy market, or we're going to dispatch them, you know, for a utility program, or we're going to dispatch them for the state, you know, Clean Peak standard program, or whatever the case.
Because our software is programmed to understand when those markets will right. be paying, and therefore when is the right time
That's
to go
exactly
into that.
That's exactly right.
Yeah.
Right.
Wow. Incredibly cool. I love that stuff.
I have just one quick aside here, because just to maybe illustrate this for our listeners, something I read about recently called the Great British Kettle Surge. And so it's the energy surge that occurs in the UK when millions of tea kettles are turned on at the same time. And this happens most of all during live network programming TV commercial breaks.
Wow.
So it's this thing where they actually in the UK, they have to keep in mind when they actually, the state works with the television programs to know when the commercials are going to come on, because that's when everybody sets their kettles, and that's when the grid surges.
Wow. So one of the biggest energy efficiency programs for the UK could be cable.
Right. Right.
If anyone's listening in the UK, they're now annoyed with us, but I don't know that we have any UK listeners.
On-demand streaming.
Well, actually, our number one listener, Luke Hanman, is originally from the UK, so he'll get a kick out of
this. There you go, right? Just a good example of how, you know, right, people using electricity simultaneously can affect the grid.
Right.
Well, it's interesting in that, you know, a big part of what we do, for example, at that customer in Lowell, is, you know, if you're a customer in New England, you pay about $50,000 for every megawatt that you import on the peak hour of the year, right? Mm-hmm. So this year it was on September 7th. It happened in September the first time ever this year.
Wow.
Right? As wow. things get hotter and hotter later and later, as we, you know, are recording this on a 65 degree day in November,
yeah,
which kind of brings home why we're doing this
exactly.
Right?
It's why we get out of bed in the morning. Yeah.
So, you know, in that 1 hour, there's a what they call cap tag, ICAP, whatever you call it. If you import a megawatt of power on, you know, September 7th of this year in the hour ending 1800, it costs you $50,000 for 1 hour, right?
And then it sets your payment for the rest of the year.
For the following year, you have to pay, you know, essentially what amounts to $50,000 for that megawatt that you import.
So did we hit the? Did we catch the peak?
We did.
We did.
We did with both the cogen and the battery.
I should have known the answer to that.
No, we're in fact it just so happens that for, you know, we're actually working on automating reports for you. And that was actually the call I had, mm-hmm. you know, before here. And we were looking, you know, I looked into that day. Mm-hmm. We have a software called iTrend that where you can go in and do historian reporting mm-hmm. and stuff like that. That our folks and a lot of our technology folks are in Philly and they're awesome. And they mm-hmm. developed this historian, web-based historian tool called iTrend where you can go in and get pretty much any data point known to man and put on a graph and compare it to this or that and the other thing. And so I went and looked in on September 7th and sure enough, both, you know, they usually import, that particular client imports about 3,600 kilowatts. And I think it was brought down to like 200 or 300 kilowatts in that hour.
Wow.
So you, and save, that's you going, save for in that hour, we save probably close to $200,000.
And that goes all to the customers. I remember
100% to the customers.
Yeah. See, that's, we got to, yeah, that's amazing. And I just want to say, and I'll kick it over to Mike. I know you've got some questions, but I just think this is the, you know, this to step back and talk about why this is important, right? We have talked a lot on the podcast about the fact that if we're going to hit decarbonization goals, we're talking about rethinking the way the energy systems work, and that requires a combination of savings and incentives. You can't get to electrification, as we've talked about a lot. You can't decarbonize the building stock and the way we generate energy without sending market signals and making projects like this one work. Part of what made this project work was the alternative energy credits, which is something like a renewable energy credit for cogen. That's changing. That's fine. But you got to have these programs in place that incentivize projects like this to get these kind of to get these projects built and to get the decarbonization that we need by 2030, mm-hmm. 2040, 2050. So
I agree.
And to do it, you need a complex layered revenue streams, and that requires companies like Icetech. And it's just really cool to see it in operation.
Matt, what do you see as coming around the corner?
Oh, great question. Mike/Barry White.
Yeah, Barry, you want to sing that question?
Man, you're not the first person to even call me Barry White today, so it must be coming in pretty good.
I think that's this is a very soothing podcast, Mike.
Hey, it's Matt, a compliment.
What do you think's coming around the corner?
So right back to the question. All right, just ignore my needle. So that actually is a good question. Good lead as Mike drinks his Labatt's Blue. Speaking of old movies, you ever seen the movie Strange Brew?
I don't think I have. Oh, I should have.
The Canadian? Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Is there some Labatt's in there?
Oh, there's a lot of Labatt's in there. Yeah, yeah. This is like another 70s.
Good old Labatt.
More
homework. More homework for our young listeners.
Younger listeners.
Right. Charlie and I are dating ourselves. But I digress. So what's come around the corner? So what's interesting, I think, is Charlie, you mentioned about kind of signals and incentivizing and stuff like that. And I talked earlier about being dynamic and, I mentioned, Icetech is, I'm based in Cambridge and we have a small team here in Massachusetts. Most of the folks are down in Philly, and the core folks down in Philly, Icetech's been around for 20 years. And what they've really sort of, ingrained in me is this idea of being dynamic, right? Of changing. And I mentioned that before. And traditionally it's been around market signals, largely economic signals, like, hey, participate in this market. You know, as an example, If you're a cogen plant, you know, we have big university customers that have, you know, large generation. Sometimes it's better for them economically to actually not generate their own power, right? They will actually say, you know, instead of generating at, you know, make up a number, 20 megawatts, I'm going to drop it down to 10 megawatts because that 10 megawatts is actually cheaper to import than it is to generate myself. Right.
And that's usually time of day, right?
It's time of day. It's, yeah, you know,
middle of the night or something.
And if it's, you know, it actually gets it pretty interesting with solar, right? Like, you know, on a today, I didn't actually look at it today, but today, it was likely, power is probably likely pretty expensive early on because it was relatively cold, but it was relatively sunny. This happens a lot in April and May, right? It's, you know, 40 degrees when you wake up on April 15th, right? But it's going to be sunny that day, but there's no heating load, there's no cooling load, so you get that duck curve.
Right, because all the solar comes on.
All the solar comes on. Price will go negative.
Yeah.
Right? Price will go negative in the middle of the day at noon, because you're actually closer to the summer solstice in late April than you are in late August when it's hot. Right? So you'll have not a lot of load because there's not a lot of heating. There's not a lot of cooling. Right? But you have a lot of solar in the system. So in the middle of the day, you'll see prices actually go negative.
What does that mean when they go negative?
You get paid. You get paid. Uh-huh. To take power. If you're our customer, let's say our big institutional customers, at that time they're on a real time rate, they'll back off their cogens because they're actually getting paid
to take power.
Take the power.
Because in order to maintain grid stability, right, they have to deliver it.
So somewhere. if you're a combined cycle plant that's generating, you know, power, you're not gonna shut off your entire plant for the, you know, right, 60, 90, 120 minutes that this is happening, right?
Right.
You're gonna take it in the chin for that time, right? And then because later in the day, you're going to see those prices ramp back up. Sun goes right down and prices get expensive again because right, it gets down to 40 degrees, heating load comes on, right? Right? And prices will kind of skyrocket. So what we do is be responsive to that.
Right.
Right. So Mike, I know you asked the question and I swear I'm going to answer it. What is interesting is a lot of times there's a strong correlation between that price and carbon, right? So as these markets where you start to have a price on carbon, for example, some of our many, many listeners will, you know, recognize Birdo or New York City have Local Law 97.
Yes, we've talked about Local Law 97 right on the pod, where buildings have, and Birdo, which is the Boston version, have a cap on their emissions. And if they emit more than that cap in any given year, they pay a fine.
Right. So it's a carbon tax on buildings.
Yeah.
Right. So right now it exists in Boston with Birdo, just passing Cambridge with something called Budo, Local Law 97, New York City. Your hometown of Newton has actually got one on the books as well, I believe.
It does? I didn't even realize.
I believe so. Yeah. Yeah. So, you know, when you have a price on carbon or when a customer really values driving down their carbon, what I see, you know, to answer your question, Mike, is, you know, being responsive to carbon, this idea of dispatching on carbon.
Right.
Right. And starting to track carbon. And, you know, whether it be a battery you're arbitraging on carbon. You're charging when carbon is low, and you're discharging when carbon is high.
Mm-hmm.
The degree that you have a signal, to get back to your point about signals, to the point you have a signal on that, or you're incentivized to go after that, then we have the ability. We're actually doing this today. You have the ability to take carbon into that decision making process and begin to actually, quote unquote, dispatch on carbon.
Your software. Yeah.
Our software.
Which is hugely relevant to Renew because, of course, we're solving for decarbonization in our projects. Yeah.
And so, you know, yeah. I'll, to give an example of this is, Mike, did you have a question? You want to say something?
No, I was just quickly going to add, you know, the largest companies are setting, you know, targets beyond just net zero. They're trying to be 24/7, you know, net carbon zero. So that this tracking, like, the Googles and the Facebook, right? They have these 24/7 carbon. So this real-time alignment of carbon resources is certainly coming at with the people who have the resources, but interest to see how this kind of comes to the rest of the energy market.
Yeah, I think it'll be interesting when there's a clear incentive to drive down, you know, when there's a price on carbon, right?
Right.
And to give an example, everybody's talking about electrification, right? And rightfully so.
Moving your heating and cooling
right
to away from on-site fossil fuels like gas and oil and so forth, propane in the rural areas, to electric sources like heat pumps.
Exactly. Yeah. So you electrify.
Yeah.
And if you're, you know, a bigger institution or, you know, an office building like we are, then you're going to say, all right, we're going to electrify, right? But there's actually times where it's not in the best interest from a carbon perspective to be using electricity, right? If it's really hot outside, you know, that you're actually relatively dirty. The grid is relatively dirty.
Because they're calling on their backup plants, which are usually right now.
Yeah, coal. So it's like a marginal.
Are any of them coal powered?
No, in New England, we don't
have
any
gas.
Coal left. We actually, when it gets really hot or really cold, particularly when it gets really cold, we use a fair amount of oil.
Oh, the backup peakers are oil?
Yeah. So it's kind of, think of this marginal unit, the last unit. And it's, you know, perversely, particularly post Ukraine, traditionally New England was reliant on LNG for sort of those marginal units. They were very expensive, but they're on a relative basis relatively clean, right? So this, you know, LNG from Trinidad and Tobago or whatever would come in New England. When it got really cold, that would sort of be the marginal unit because you don't have enough pipeline natural gas coming into the market. I don't know if this is interesting or not. If it isn't, feel free to say. All right, moving on. Barry White can step in. And
Barry will say, let's rate the beer. No, you're good. You're good.
Yeah, so please. You talk about systems, right? You talk about how all this stuff fits together. Right. And traditionally, it's been LNG, it's liquefied natural gas. Mm-hmm. That is, because we don't, you know, it gets really cold, you know, natural gas goes to heating. That's the priority, right? Because you don't want people freezing. So there's, you know, it's less natural gas to go to electricity generation. So pipeline natural gas. So traditionally, that LNG would kind of make up the difference. When Ukraine happened, you know, that reliance on Russian gas, all that LNG went to Europe. Right. So we were relying on peaking plants, on oil burning peaking plants. So for the last two winters, we've seen emissions actually increase fairly dramatically as a result of that.
OK, so, I mean, that's amazing. I did not know that. That's just another indication of the fact that this is a global enterprise.
It's a system. It's a global system. Right. So to understand how this system works, when you're talking about electrification.
Yep.
Most of the time you're right, but there's times where you actually don't, you know, that isn't where you want to be, right?
Right.
You're actually going to be better off. Let's say you're a large industrial user or a large commercial user. You want to industrify, you're going to put in an electric chiller, right? Or an electric boiler, right? Mm-hmm. Which if you talk to some Mass Maritime graduate who's 65 years old and you mention, you know, in our little tours of these equipment,
the guys that actually know what's going on.
Like if you mention to that person about an electric boiler, their head will actually pop off their shoulder.
So true.
They will lose their mind.
They'll be like, "You what?"
But there's no way. But if you want to electrify and you need high pressure steam, which a lot of folks have, if you're a biotech or a university or whatever the case may be, you need high pressure steam. And so a lot of these folks are going to go to electric boilers. So one option is to go to electric boilers, which you say, great, okay, electricity is cleaner. Well, it's not always cleaner, right? So what we've talked about, like a use of the technology, for example, is you know, we track real-time emissions of the grid, you know, and we say, all right, actually right now it's not in your best interest to be using electricity. It's actually probably smarter for you to switch over to a cogen or switch over to even a regular natural gas into a boiler because it's cleaner.
Yeah, so that's fascinating. So where we're going is tracking carbon, pricing carbon.
And being responsive to carbon.
And being responsive and coming full circle to ICETEC, that requires sophisticated teams using software that can track a number of inputs, including pricing, including carbon, including customer behavior, and frankly, including geopolitical issues like, unfortunately.
Yeah, it's all tied in the system. And to kind of go back to what we talked about early on is this idea that, you know, the sort of the mission, the religion at ICETEC is to be dynamic, is to be responsive. You don't just turn it on and forget it, whether it's a battery or, you know, whether it's a cogeneration plant or whatever the case may be. It's this idea to being responsive.
Yeah.
As things change, right? As you have a price of carbon, or, you know, as there's, you know, wars in Ukraine, so, you know, now you're using more oil as opposed to more natural gas and emissions go up, you can be responsive to that.
Yep, and that's kind of the watchword for decarbonization is the critical nature of being responsive, being flexible, and the use of technology.
And being humble, beautiful. Charlie, right? Yeah. Like the humility comes in where you recognize that you don't necessarily, you know, I haven't figured it all out. And when things change, you have to be humble enough to be like, all right.
To be ready to change with it. Yeah, totally. Maybe that's something we need to explain to customers too. All right. Well, this is fascinating.
Yeah, thanks for walking us around that corner there, Matt. But I do think it's time for some Trillium. And
let's do it. We may have to have Matt back on, but because that was fascinating. All right, Trillium. We're drinking Melcher Street, which is they name their beers after typically either streets in Boston, or there's a bird series. I haven't figured out the naming convention. There's a duck series, there's a pigeon series, then there's a road series. This is kind of their straight up IPA.
This is delicious.
Yeah.
I don't know if I stole the lead there, but this is delicious.
Yeah. Go.
No, it's great. It's
Matt,
great.
Tell us what you think.
Oh, you want me to?
So talk? Yeah, so just to the scoring is between 1 and 10. Nathan, take it away.
So here, I'll do a quick rundown here. Again, it's Trillium, the Melcher Street Brew, an IPA, which is less than a 10-minute walk from where we are right now in the financial district in Boston. And a quick note on Trillium sustainability. There have two components to their sustainability plan. One is carbon capture, so CO2 capture, because carbon dioxide, as Trillium says, is both a byproduct of the fermentation process and also necessary for carbonation, right? It's what gives it fizz. So the brewing process is a natural fit for a circular carbon economy because they're putting in CO2, but they're also emitting CO2. So
that's cool.
They're capturing that carbon and reusing it.
Question for you, Nathan. Does that mean when we drink it, we're actually a carbon sink? Or carbon storage? Are we a carbon storage technology?
Yeah. We should get 45Q credit.
I'll defer to Matt on that one.
We have to get Icetech to trade in beer drinker.
Exactly. There's
carbon capture.
So the interesting thing about it is that it in addition to sustainability, it also, they say it improves the flavor. So they actually have more control over the CO2 that they put into their beer, and that sometimes when you're just putting in CO2, you don't always have control of
Can they make it more carbonated?
They can make it more to me, it sounds to me more like it's a purer CO2. Like there's just less, there might be less other types of elements or chemicals in there. And so they say that not only does it reduce carbon emissions, it also tastes better. So that's cool.
That's very
cool. And then the second would be agriculture, which they have their own farm in Connecticut, and they are still experimenting on exactly which hops to grow when, but it's not a monoculture crop. They have many different hops that they rotate through their farm in Connecticut. So definitely a relatively sustainable practice there. In terms of rating, it's going to be 1 out of 10 for taste, and you can add up to a point for sustainability. You could add a quarter of a point, half a point, or if you think they're awesome, a full point. So that brings us to this brewery.
Take it away, Matt. What do you think?
You want me to start?
Yeah.
Well, it's delicious. I do like IPAs. This is a particularly tasty IPA. 7.2 ABV, which is, you know, you only want to drink a couple of.
Not for the faint of heart.
It hurts
the crushability factor.
In our age, yeah, exactly. That'll hurt the crushability factor, Mike. You're not going to want to stick a key in the bottom of this thing and shotgun it like college. probably talked a little bit too much about my passing.
A window.
We've been there.
A window.
We've all been there.
College, I mentioned it with the Boston College. So yeah. You live near Boston College. You've experienced that a little bit.
Absolutely.
No, it's a delicious beer. All the Trillium beers are really, really, really well done. And this is no exception at all. I'm not sure I know enough about the sustainability story, really. But all the Trillium beers are, you know, absolutely one of my favorites.
So scale of 1 to 10?
I would put this at a 9.
And sustainability kicker?
I don't know enough.
All right.
Can I know more?
That's mostly what they have on their website, right? It's the carbon capture.
They don't have a lot on energy.
Right.
No.
They don't
have anything on renewables.
So you could add a quarter of a point, half a point.
They do have some packaging recycling. I saw that.
That is true. Yeah, you're right.
How about labor? I know that's not energy, but how are they doing labor-wise?
That I cannot say I'm 100% sure. Yeah.
I think they're not a full point because they don't emphasize it beyond the CO2 capture.
I haven't heard anything on water, and I haven't heard anything on energy.
No, nothing on water. Yeah. We've had some breweries that do significant work
on water. Yeah, so. I think it's a big issue with water. So I'm not going to knock Trillium, but I'm not going to give them a whole lot on the sustainability front.
Great.
Taste-wise?
9.
9.
Yeah, perfect. I'm going to go 9. But I'm not going to give them any sustainability points either. I think the CO2 capture is really interesting, but we've seen a lot of breweries that have, they emphasize renewables either on site or community solar. We've got water programs, more on recycling. I think the farm is cool, but I'm actually going to give them no kicker just because of the lack of emphasis. So I'm going to give them.
They brew out of Canton, is that right? Is that mostly where they brew? Right.
Yeah. That's actually great. They would have room out there.
I would think solar.
They would.
I've never been there.
Yeah, I've been to the site. They actually do have room for solar. Okay, so I'm going to give them a 9 with no kicker. Yeah.
And if you want to do better, call Renew.
Exactly.
Probably Trillium.
Yeah.
Exactly. And Ice Tech can monitor the carbon, right?
Put in a battery.
Now, if I was Mike Savage, I would say, Mike, how would you score this? It's an IPA that I love. Very smooth.
You've
very
had IPAs
hoppy,
from Trillium.
Very strong.
Yeah. I mean, probably like a low 8 is my guess. Mm-hmm. I do love. Trillium has one of my favorite drinks is a beer wine hybrid that they call the Onenbrier. Yeah. And it's delicious.
We went out to the Four Point tap room. In January, you had that, and you said, this is the best thing I've ever had, right?
Yeah. I mean, I might have already had a couple at that point, but the taste buds might have been might have been a little biased. But, yeah, that was it was like 9%. It was very, very, very good drink.
So low 8 with
low
a
8.
Kicker or no kicker?
No kicker, probably pretty low crushability, by my guess,
Mike, what's your you're talking to us from Vermont, which is the Napa Valley of beers.
Of course.
What is your favorite brewery in the whole United States of America?
Favorite brew? I mean, honestly, like Trillium and the Onenbrier is up there for me right now. I really do like that beer. In the last year, that's been the best one to date. The palate is always changing and, dynamic as well, staying up with the times. So, we'll see where it is next year. I'm looking around the corner waiting for it. Could be a new one. Just gotta see what happens.
It's Trillium.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Nathan, what about you?
Yeah, I think I'm going to go with, I'll go with an 8. 0.75, and I'll give them a quarter of a point for sustainability.
So 9
I'll
total.
Give them, the carbon capture. I'll give them that. So 9 total.
Okay. So while Nathan runs the math to figure out where they rank, Mike, do you want to ask our question?
Absolutely, Matt. If you could have a beer with anybody dead or alive, who would it be?
Oh man, that's a doozy. So, Nathan, you can pause. You can cut out the silence here for a while.
Right? Da, na, 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 na,
so if I wait 30 seconds, you can make that like a 5 second.
Oh, yeah. Oh, everything's possible.
All right. Because that silence will put our many listeners to sleep. Who would I...
Anybody dead or alive.
Anybody dead or alive. I think one of the most fascinating characters, I don't know how good he'd be in a conversation because I don't know how revealing he would be. I think one of the most fascinating characters is Lyndon Johnson.
Absolutely great choice.
So, but I don't know how great he would be as a conversationalist.
I bet he'd be fascinating. He'd be a great addition. Our beer circle is quite interesting now. One of our guests this year said Odysseus.
Odysseus.
Yeah. Expanded our range by thousands of years. We've got Tiger Woods. We've got Rachel Carson. We've got Nathan. Who are some of the other? Well, we've got Aurora's dad. Aurora, who works for us, is dad, which is great.
Babe Ruth.
Barack Obama.
Barack Obama. Tom Brady. Nina Simone.
Oh, Nina Simone.
Yeah, that was me. Yeah.
So it's a
that was a Mike one.
That was Mike.
Yeah.
Yeah. So we've got a great list. I mean, it'd be a really good gathering for a beer. And Lyndon Johnson, welcome Lyndon. Yeah. Welcome Lyndon LBJ. Johnson to the beer circle.
That so we went to Greece. Our family went to Greece this summer, and you know, like the guy that led Athens to its height is this guy Pericles.
Mm-hmm.
So.
You might toss him in there.
I might toss Pericles in there.
I think that's nice for Odysseus.
Well, yeah, so you just got me thinking with the Greek. Well, but I'm gonna stick with Lyndon Johnson. Lyndon Johnson to me is one of the most fascinating characters in American history.
He really is. He really is. So Mike, we got Lyndon Johnson and Pericles. I totally agree with you. He's an amazing politician and also
Have you read those Robert Caro books?
I have not met the Caro.
Oh, my dad has those. I've heard they're very good. I mean, it's a fascinating, just a political trajectory in the first place, as in addition to, you know, where he comes from and all that stuff.
Master of the Senate, his book about his time from 1947 to 1957, when he basically came into the Senate, and by the time he left, he was arguably the most powerful person in the country, is the best book I've ever read.
Okay, that's very cool. So we have a book recommendation out of it, too. That's very cool. All right, Lyndon Johnson joins the crew.
Love
wonderful,
it.
Wonderful.
Great question, Mike. Thank you.
We got to ask everybody that question. It does turn out that that our average for Trillium got an 8.75. So that's going to put it, we have a top five that puts it at number six.
Okay.
Puts it at number six. Five.
And then you know what? Sustainability hurt them.
Right. Yeah, that's true. Really that's true. So we do love Trillium. We do love Trillium. We'll have to try the wine beer hybrid on the pod at some point. That'll be a special episode. But again, it's just really been a fascinating conversation, Matt. Thank you so much for being here.
Well, thanks for having me. This has been super fun. Super fun. Thanks for the opportunity.
You bet.
Yeah. Thanks, Matt. Until next time, this has been Green Beers.
Green Beers is brought to you by Renew Energy Partners, your partner in building decarbonization. Decarbonizing your building is good for the earth and it's a smart business move, but it's complicated and it can cost you a lot of money. Our goal is to decarbonize your building while saving you money, so all of those retrofits pay for themselves. Learn more at renewep.com.